I saw a musical with a bunch of like 70s music. It was a 70s jukebox musical.
Disaster?
Yeah, Disaster. So much for trying not to say the name. They have I Will Survive in there, but they have one line of it, and that is it. I don't understand how they picked the songs for that musical.
Maybe they used as much as they could without paying royalties.
Actually, that would make a lot of sense.
Welcome to the Survivor Turn Back Time podcast, the only Survivor podcast that seduces you with our pretty country ways. I am your host, Steve Levine, with my co-host, Jared Sheldon. Jared, that cowboy hat you got on.
And nothing else.
Oh, God, no.
Except for another little tiny cowboy hat in one specific place.
That's a hat on a hat.
God damn it. You know, I was going to say, like, oh, yeah, you and me, the most country people to ever have existed. And then I realized we did both grow up in rural areas.
We did.
So it could be worse.
I had a country music festival in my hometown.
Yeah, that's wild. I probably did too or something. The town I grew up in is halfway between Chicago and Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
So we would get bands that I would call it a pity stop, where they would play a show there. Because we did have an arena, but it wasn't very big.
Mm.
So it'd be like, especially like middle of the pack bands, like, you know, fucking Beyonce ain't coming to Battle Creek.
No.
But I saw Avenged Sevenfold there.
That's cool.
Yeah.
My festival in my hometown, called Wii Fest, I know, right?
Sponsored by Nintendo, or really cease and desisted by Nintendo. Let's be real.
It was long before Nintendo.
That probably won't stop them.
Well, actually, I take that back. It was around long before Nintendo started making video games.
Well, yeah, fair enough.
Nintendo's been around for centuries at this point.
Their lawyers are actually ancient red dragons.
But they drew some big names. They also drew some shit people.
Oh, yeah.
One time, well, because they used to hire a bunch of locals to work some of the like food and beer ticket stands, and then they went corporate, so none of the locals work there anymore, and it drives everyone nuts.
Yeah, I'm sure local small towns love that.
Yeah. So I would watch some of these, especially when the headliner was on, because no one would be coming up to you buying tickets. Sure. So I would just watch the headliners, and I saw some, like, good headliners and Kid Rock.
I went through a little bit of a Kid Rock phase in my teens. Not like he was my favorite artist, but he was in the playlist, you know?
He's not a good live performer.
I don't imagine that he would be. But Bawa Daba, that was, you know, along with like Rob Zombie and shit like that, like on my high school iPod for sure. Also, okay. I grew up in Michigan, so it was like one of those things. Yeah, he sucks. You know who's the worst I've ever heard perform live, though?
Who?
Hollywood Undead.
Okay.
They actually, that Avenged Sevenfold concert, they opened. They were one of the openers. And that was my first, at least ever, concert going to that I had picked. Like, maybe I had been to one with my mom before that, like, as a kid. But I don't really remember it. And I just was like, this can't be what this is. It has to be better than this. And then Stone Sour and whoever else was opening, like, was significantly better than that. They were probably all blitzed out of their gourd.
Oh, yeah.
Especially because Battle Creek is, like, the drug capital of Michigan.
Why else do you go to Battle Creek to perform a show?
Yeah, well, precisely. They sounded like not in content, obviously, but in, I would say, professionalism and being on pitch and in, like, where they need to be in the words and all of that, were akin to more of, like, a youth group. Like,
oh, no.
Like a youth pastor rapping.
Yikes.
Yeah. Yeah, it was rough.
I know I've said this on the show before, but I'm going to say it again because it's funny. I have seen Smash Mouth 3 times on accident.
It's so funny. You should never lose 2 truths and a lie.
It's so good. Like, how do you just show up and, oh, they're Smash Mouth? Not once, but 3 times.
It's the Smash Mouth Everywhere system.
Can't do that anymore, but...
Why not?
Because the lead singer of Smash Mouth is dead.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, yeah. That would make that...
Well, I assume difficult. They're not touring, because he was kind of the band.
Yeah. Some bands do. I mean, like, how much of the original, like, well, I was going to say Lynyrd Skynyrd, but that would actually be zero, famously, because of the plane crash. Or, like, maybe the Eagles original. I don't know, like, Bon Jovi, Van Halen. Like, those bands, like, they kept touring for long after some of the original members had passed away.
I'm cool if you replace one member. If you're replacing two members, then you better still have the lead singer. If you're going beyond that, then I'm like, what's even the point?
Yeah, and it really is. We're just talking about the ship of Theseus now. How many pieces can you remove and it still stays the same ship? Sure. It turns out it depends on how important each individual piece is in this case. The only other way I would say is, like, if you have someone tragically pass away, then it's like, well, yeah, of course, you can replace them and keep going. But if it's like, you guys have been around for 40 years and people are either just sick of doing it or, like, you know, passing away from old age and you're just putting in new people, just make a new band.
Yeah.
You're just riding the coattails of the name.
Queen with Adam Lambert, great choice.
Ooh, that's true, yeah.
Yeah. I wish I could have seen them. I assume they're still touring, but last time they came around, tickets were like $500+.
Yeah, it makes sense.
I can't afford that shit.
That's still even a tough one for me, because Freddie Mercury is so iconic.
Yeah, oh yeah. And they stopped touring for a long, long time. Yeah. And then this was their coming back, because Adam Lambert was a fucking star.
Yeah.
It, like, he didn't even come in and say, I'm Adam Lambert, I'm here to, like, revamp Queen. Queen brought them in and was like, hey, you can sing this shit. Let's
do
it.
You are the next coming of Freddie Mercury.
I don't know about that.
Those are big shoes to fill.
There are big shoes to fill. And I think Adam Lambert did a good job.
Yeah. Anyway, this has been the Survivor Classic Rock podcast.
I do love me some classic rock.
I grew up with a lot of it. And then I was like, no, this shit sucks. I want more modern stuff. And now I'm going and revisiting and going, actually, that was pretty good. It was just the default. And when, like, for me growing up, like, that's all my mom listened to was, like, 80s rock.
Yeah.
And so I listened to a lot of it, and then I completely fell off. I was like, ugh, God, that's so boring. Now I'm like, well, no, that actually goes kind of slap.
Did you do your Rush homework?
God damn it, Stephen. You know what isn't homework?
Hold on, this is a legitimate question. Did you do your Rush homework?
I don't remember what you specifically instructed me to do, even though it was 24 hours ago.
Go listen to 2112.
No, okay, I'll do that probably today while I'm scootering to callbacks.
Okay. It's okay. I was just seeing if you did or not.
No, I foregore.
I foregore.
I also didn't take it seriously. I didn't realize you were actually follow up with me.
Go do it.
Okay.
You know what else I'm going to follow up with? Emails. If you want to email us, feel free to do so. SurvivorTBT@gmail.com. Or you can message us on Reddit, u/SurvivorTBT. Or on Patreon. You can follow us on Patreon for free. You can watch us do a shot of a horrible, horrible concoction.
Dear God.
Called the Chicago Fire. It's on there. And thank you, Bro My God, /Steve, /the guy who requested it.
It tasted like earwax-flavored toothpaste. It's awful. Also, there's nothing more embarrassing than me trying to hand you off to emails and you just going, no.
No.
We haven't taken improv classes, clearly.
Not together.
I've actually never taken one.
Oh, really?
No.
I've done a little bit, not too much. Anyway, emails. Jumping in with a Josh email. Oh, no. Gmail is giving me a button to summarize this email.
Ew.
Oh, no. They're working AI into their email system.
Don't worry, Josh. We won't put you into the machine.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of that.
Anyway. Unless it just did it because Josh's email is super long and it's like, hey, man, you want us to get you? We know you're not going to read it. Well, we are.
I mean, it is pretty long. This is why I held on to it. Okay. Josh says, I don't think Kenny was ever let the whole immunity thing between him and Bob go. He also plays as Marth as his main fighter in Melee.
Okay.
He's a Marth guy. Jeff Probst actually tried to quit hosting after this season. He said this
for the fifth time.
He said it in an interview. This is the point in the show where Jeff starts his transition from host to producer. Years later, this is in quotes, years later, though, the show was drifting. Mr. Probst said the low point was Gabon, which was broadcast in 2008. He said he felt burned out and was also a little self-conscious about being known as the Survivor guy.
That's fair.
My Achilles heel for a lot of my life was that nobody saw me as a storyteller. They just saw me as a white guy with dark hair who was just a game show host.
Mm.
Mr. Probst said, and that in terms of my own self-image was the thing that could gut me. It was like a kidney punch.
That is interesting because Gabon is where he starts putting way more spin on the ball in the recaps.
Mm.
And I actually do think Jeff is a pretty good storyteller. I think sometimes we don't want him to be a storyteller
right.
because the line between telling the story and influencing the story for him is incredibly narrow, and he jumps it like a hopscotch rope. But yeah, I can see that insecurity for sure.
The frustration and exhaustion were enough that in 2009, Mr. Probst went to Mr. Moonvist and quit, he said. Mr. Moonvist told him to take a break, and Mr. Probst took a few months off, returning to the show re-energized. Some changes were made to the production team, he said, and then he focused squarely on the show's success formula, serving the loyal audience and not worrying about doing more than that. Okay, so basically he came in and said, we're refocusing this to, we're not pulling in new people anymore, we're just, let's make it a good Survivor show.
I think that mentality is good. I don't think it has to be either or. Like, it's kind of odd that they see that as like a flip of the switch instead of, hey, if we make it really good for the people that like it, they will tell people to watch it, and or people that like would like it will be more likely to stick to it the first time they watch it instead of trying to cast or try to get people that might not like the show.
Sure. Maddie apparently came from a decently wealthy background and blew through his trust fund due to a party lifestyle.
I can see it.
That's funny. Not funny, but it's like, huh.
No, it's because he's such like a bruh. It's like, oh yeah, okay. Yep.
Sugar has said part of the reason she forced a tie is that she felt Maddie didn't really need the money as much as Bob did.
Interesting. Or that he'd be irresponsible with it sounds like.
I mean, maybe. I've said this in emails before, and I'll probably say it again in the future, but likability is 100 times more important than a resume. There is absolutely nothing Sugar could have ever said or done to win the season because the people out there simply didn't respect her. On the flip side, you get players like Susie and I'd say Ethan too, but people online always hate me when I say that, who are likable and just fluke themselves into a position where they win by pure luck.
Yeah. It is, I agree that likability is so much more important. I also think Sugar's likable. So that's, like, she did not show that. I think she could use her resume to make her likable. We haven't seen enough people try that. Todd did a little bit of, like, yeah, you know, I had to do all those things, but, like, it's a game, and you still like me, or, like, you know, whatever. But it is, yeah, Sugar's so interesting right from the beginning because everybody underestimates her. But it's so hard to win at the end when people are still underestimating you. You
right.
have to show them that actually they were wrong, which is one of the hardest things to do in a conversation.
No one has ever admitted they are wrong.
No.
Sugar has said she had mixed feelings over whether going on Survivor was a good idea for her at that point in her life. She apparently had a panic attack a couple hours before the final tribal council.
Okay.
That would be tough. One lie they never showed that I had never heard of before is that Sugar was telling all the ex-Coda people that she played the idol on herself when Kelly got voted out.
Oh.
So when Bob went to exile, there should have been a brand new idol for him to find.
Oh, wait, that makes so much more of that makes sense. I wish we would have had that.
Yeah. It seems like something that could have been used in the storyline.
That explains why everyone was, like, discounting Sugar having the idol.
Mm-hmm.
Because it makes sense that she would not, that she would have used it there. Like, that's a really good lie on her case. Damn, okay.
I'm honestly surprised you ranked Bob as high as you did for winners. He and Jenna were pretty commonly considered the bottom two winners for a decent bit of time, until some even worse ones came along. I'll probably send my winner ranking so far in a follow-up email. Bob was well-liked, though, which was definitely needed after you two had two villainous winners who certain people really hated.
Wait, Earl? Because it'd be Parv and then Earl.
I think Parv is the one that is being looked at.
Oh, wait, no. Todd.
Yeah.
Never mind. I put Fiji in front of... I mixed up the running... Which season came first? No, it was Todd and then Parv.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Earl is not a villain.
No, that's why I was so confused.
Pretty much all of the cast at one point or another have said something to agree with the fact that Bob was pervy out there.
Okay.
However, Kenny made much stronger allegations, saying that Bob was inappropriately touching some of the women. I linked a clip from one of his Twitch streams where he talks about it in detail. I have a tough time taking this from Kenny.
Agreed.
Giving the context that he despises Bob.
And holds this really weird personal grudge because he got played. If there was anybody corroborating that, including any of the victims, that's a much different conversation. Mm-hmm. But that sounds... I'm not really inclined to believe Kenny there, unfortunately.
I'm going to put it in this land of I don't know.
Sure.
Because I'm not going to be like, oh, yeah. If someone's being predatory out there, just... Well, I heard one person say it, throw it out the window. But again, I've a tough time taking it from that mouth specifically.
Yeah, exactly. Kenny is incredibly biased here and has shown that in multiple other scenarios.
There was also an interview with Crystal on the Survivor Oz podcast where she also talked about Bob. However, when the Survivor Oz podcast quit making episodes, a lot of their episodes were scrapped from the internet, so I couldn't find what she had to say.
Ah.
According to what I could find online, she said she still respects Bob as a person, but does say he did inappropriate things out there, such as being handsy with the women. So that's a little more corroboration.
Okay.
She apparently wanted him to ask him about it in her jury question, but producers pressured her not to. I'd be interested in if any of your other listeners have heard this before in an interview and know what she actually said firsthand.
Yeah, interesting. As far as like the game, I hope I communicated this well enough in the finale. I think that Bob, like, there's a difference between doing nothing brackets passive and doing nothing brackets active. And I think that Bob is actively choosing to not do things. I mean, plus his immunity run is very impressive. Mm-hmm. That is something that I think it doesn't pull a winner up, but it can keep them from going farther down because you have one thing inside of your own personal control and you had it, you did it like almost every single time, Bob. That is damn impressive.
Mm-hmm.
He did as much as he needed to do and nothing more.
Sure.
Like, he looked around and like he put a lot of faith in Sugar to make the right decision for him, maybe not the right decision for her. And I think that was his best play. Like, he made all of the best plays, even if he didn't set himself up well in the early game.
He quote-unquote survived.
Kind of, yeah. And then, yes, one of the worst final tribals for a winner,
it's
for
tough.
Sure.
It's
might be
tough.
The worst one.
Continuing on, new email from Josh. Winner rankings with some notes. Keep in mind, this is only based on gameplay and does not factor in how much I like them. I did factor in likability. Sandra and Jenna would be, if I did factor in likability, Sandra and Jenna would be much higher.
I think likability for, I try not to put them for like how much I like them, but it is a bit of a factor because it's also how much the jury likes them and how much people like them. Like, that is your charisma is a factor, but not how much I personally like them.
I would also add that having surprising winners is often interesting if their story is well told. So starting with S tier. Number one, Earl, completely dominated the game, never targeted, unanimous win. Two, Brian, completely dominated the game. Three, Tom, dominated the game, a bit underrated strategically as well. A tier, Tina, dominated the game but did win a very narrow vote. Five, Aris, was in a strong position but was in constant danger due to the super idol. Todd, strong but messy. Seven, Amber, strong game but I do think she had a massive advantage coming in. That makes it less impressive to me. Eight, Vesepia.
I'd be interested to hear what that advantage you're referencing is, because unless there's something I'm forgetting, is the advantage just being underestimated? Because it's not like she had the pre-game alliances that actually like should have been a massive advantage for people like Lex.
Amba. Eight, Vesepia. Strong game, but she did lose the final five vote, which put her in disadvantage in the end stretch. Nine, Parv. 10 to the B tier, 10 Yule, 11 Chris, I'm just skipping the descriptions, but you get the idea. 12 Sandra, 13 Hatch to the C tier, 14 Danny. I do think she's probably a better player than this ranking shows. However, I find it difficult to separate how much it is to discredit Rafe versus credit her.
Yeah, that's true.
D tier, 15 Jenna. F tier, 16 Ethan and Bob at the bottom.
Wow. Yeah, there's some discrepancies there between me and Josh that I think are interesting.
Good. This is what I like.
Again, that's kind of the point.
Yeah. So thank you. Thank you for all that information. Thank you for, like I said, with the touching inappropriately,
yeah.
We're kind of going to leave it in this bubble space because I don't know exactly how to corroborate that, and I don't know that it's my place to do so.
Yeah, it's a gray area, and he was weird, but everyone still seems to like him.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway, moving on to Michael C. Hey guys, I've been sitting on a lot of info because after a certain point, it's difficult to talk about Gabon and behind-the-scenes info without spoiling the outcome. So this email has a lot of group to cover as it talks about the season as a whole. Something that you should know is that Sugar was never winning the season. Again, we've heard that before. Even the jurors who weren't personally burned by her found her grating and annoying and impossible to live with.
Okay.
The reason why Sugar's game seems so erratic is that she's an actress and came on the show to boost her visibility and resume and win the fan favorite award more than win the game. I mean, she came close to winning the fan favorite.
Yeah, she did.
She was playing the persona of Sugar rather than Jessica, and Sugar is supposed to be a hero who lets the good people get further in the game so that she is seen positively by the audience and can use that to boost her career.
And it worked.
So on top of being annoying to live with, Sugar was not out there to win. She was basically an agent of chaos who would flip on allies if she could sense that they would be edited as villains. This was all covered much better by the Survivor Historians podcast, but that is the gist.
Wow, okay.
I would like to push back on that a little bit. I think just from what I know about Sugar as a person and like the brief conversations that I've had with her personally, I feel like she just is... in like she lives in this place where she makes decisions that may not affect, like, may not help her in the long term, but it feels right to her.
And both things can be true, right? She could have sniffed out very early that she wasn't winning this game and gone, okay, well then what am I here to do? And I wouldn't do that. Like, I would still try to win the game, but I can't discount, especially if like all the personal problems on Gabon could have led somebody to that conclusion very early on.
You can't discount double check it.
Not unless you want to tear an ACL.
The Gabon jury is notorious for how bitter it was. The Onion Alliance, mostly Marcus and Corinne, bullied and ostracized the Fangs as they joined the jury. I said Fangs on purpose, I swear. Corinne and Marcus refused to talk to Crystal for the 3 days that she was on the jury with them before Kenny arrived. Charlie had no personal grudge, but admitted that he was just following his friends. Brandy was the only one of the four to break the vow of silence and actually made amends with Crystal. They had a pact to vote for Bob, Maddie, or Kenny, in that order, basically, to ensure that Susie, and especially Sugar, would not win.
Hilarious.
You can see this high school-level behavior on the old Ponderosa videos.
And it's funny, because... I love Amazon that is, like, considered, like, the high school season. But, again, high school brackets complimentary versus Gabon is high school brackets derogatory.
Yeah. Talks about how Randy was a swing vote, which we have talked about before. And talks a little bit about the pervy Bob. And saying
the phrase, the pervy Bob, like the worst haircut I've ever heard of.
Kenny is still the main peddler. Kenny is the main peddler of those. And must be taken with a massive grain of salt. So there's that. Corinne and Sugar have said more that Bob was a bit lewd and commented on Corinne's boobs, but she took it in good fun / played along. Okay, well, there you go. And to clear up the thing, Charlie was not the future contestant Todd dated. That person is one of the next two seasons pre-Heroes versus Villains.
Got it. Okay.
Before I get to my winner feeling / season ranking, I wanted to share some Maddie lore. Trust fund baby, which we talked about. Coda's preferred him over the heavily minority other Fangs, as you can see in Corinne's speech, that there was definitely some classism from the white upper-class Coda's against the Latina hairdresser, Asian gamer, black teacher / Olympian, and white homeless actress.
Yeah, we didn't really get into that too much because Sugar's the main driving force of that and is white.
Yeah.
But yeah, huh. I didn't even think about any racism, classism there.
So there's a lot of subtext there and how the jury votes along class lines with the notable exceptions of Randy and Maddie. Mm. Jared's ranking of the season is really interesting to me because I rarely see Gabon middle of the pack. It's usually either people's cult classic favorite or they rank it at the bottom third. For me, I unabashedly love Gabon and have it top 10 out of 48.
Wow.
It's a fun topsy-turvy season that I honestly think works well as someone's first season in a lot of ways, as it has some strategic flips, tribe swaps, idols, rootable villains, rootable heroes, villains, and fun characters. That being said, wow, Jared's much higher on Bob than the general fan base. General fan base? And even people like Rob C and Bob among their bottom two winners out of the first 30 or 40 seasons, with the main thing being held against Bob, his lack of agency as a player. I kind of take a middle path approach where, yeah, he's not the most strategic winner, but I also rank on likability and character, which is why Ethan, for example, is higher than higher for me than someone like Brian.
I just think he used what he had. Like, you know, Bob wasn't going to become Todd. I think that Bob played the best possible version of his game, and it's a little bit different, but yeah.
Finally, I want to reference this from Jared toward the beginning of Gabon. Exile Island not being an island is some crazy work, but I know they go back to an actual island next season in Token Jeans, since it's Brazil again, and they have the Amazon and ocean nearby.
I'm an idiot.
Flash forward to Token Jeans, where Exile Island is in a literal desert in the highlands of Brazil, and not an island whatsoever.
Yeah, well, I should stop saying things with such authority that I have no idea what the fuck I'm talking about, huh?
Looking forward to your coverage of Token Sheens. We've got some icons to look forward to, including one of my all-time favorite players. Fun. Moving on to Tyler's. Tyler's email says, on the NMB Survivor Challenge that you mentioned, Crystal was one of three Survivor contestants that was the captain for a tribe. One of the other captains was Johnny Fairplay, mm-hmm. and the other one was someone from Season 42. Funny. Maddie married his girlfriend on June 6, 2009. He was the grandson actor of James Whitmore. He's the grandson of actor James Whitmore. He was recruited to be on Survivor when he met a casting agent while at a local Whole Foods market with his girlfriend in Santa Monica and had rarely watched the show beforehand.
God damn it. Lucky him.
That's crazy. Susie's son died in a car accident on August 11, 2016. That's really sad. In 2009, Bob published his autobiography, Making Waves, The Story of Bob Crowley. He was forbidden by the producers from mentioning the show in his book. He opened a winter camp in Durham, Maine, where every year the Durham Warriors Survival Challenge is performed, a weekend survivor-based charity fundraiser event. Did you want to comment on the
what else has Bob got going on that makes it makes him autobiography worthy?
I don't know.
That's crazy.
The 2015 edition of the Durham Warriors Survival Challenge had six of the 24 contestants be Survivor contestants, including Joel from Borneo, Brooke and Jamie from Guatemala, and three others Jared hadn't met yet.
Cool.
Looking forward to next season. And I'm going to do one more here. This is from Carl. Carl's finale email. Picture the episode. It's just a good old jury time.
Yeah, just laughing at somebody.
America's reaction to Survivor Gabon if America was six people. Notes. Ken mentioned that producers wanted the season to be good versus evil because that's actually how the season was marketed at the time, and it was relentless at that.
Apple of Eden and all of that.
Mm-hmm. It can be a bit confusing who the good guys and who are the bad guys at times, but by the end, I think it becomes a bit clearer.
It does flip-flop it a little bit, which, yeah, makes it tough.
Sugar never had her name written down at all. I'm not sure if she's the only survival or only finalist you can say that about.
Never once? I think Paloma voted for her. I thought.
I honestly don't know.
Maybe Paloma voted for Ace. Huh, okay.
I fully agree with everything Jared said about Sugar's resume. Her mixture of control and unpredictability is truly unmatched. Throughout the season, the alliances don't use her, she uses the alliances. If you view the season from the perspective of Sugar wanting to find a way to get to the end with Bob, she's one of the best players of all time. So what I'm gathering from all of this is that Sugar is kind of...
divisive.
Yeah. There's a lot of people who are like, she's great, she's not great.
It's weird, because she's the protagonist of the entire season and doesn't get a single jury vote, which is just such a crazy place to be.
And yet, There are some seasons where that matters, and there are some seasons where it just doesn't. This is one of those casts where resumes just don't really matter.
Yeah, fair.
And really, I'd say almost all juries are like that before we get to the seasons where people start using the word resume anyway. I'm 99% confident that Sugar, no matter how hard she argued for herself at Final Tribal, was never getting enough votes to win because too many people were mad at her, and she knew that.
I do think if she had a better Final Tribal, though, she wins the fan vote.
I mean, hell, we all know that Corinne's speech was revolting, yet most of the jury allegedly applauded it when she sat down. Now, I'm sorry, you said a thing and I need to push back. The fan vote doesn't work like fan votes these days. You can't just go on and a website and do that. Like, you had to call in and select your contestant. And that was airing. Like, I'm sure they closed the fan vote long before the Final Tribal Council was being aired.
I guess I thought it would have been up through the episode and the phone lines closed, like, when the reunion started.
No, I guarantee it at least closed the day before the episode.
Oh, fair enough. Okay.
Corinne's speech was widely talked about as the meanest thing anyone's ever said on Survivor, and blah, blah, blah. I'm sure she was thrilled about that.
Yeah.
I and many people have wondered for a while if Sugar was partially playing a role to further her acting career. She did go by Sugar and not Jessica after all. I do think she was genuinely her as well, but who knows where the line is in her head.
I mean, I don't think that's really fair about the she goes by Sugar rather than Jessica, because, like, hey, Coach isn't Coach's legal first name.
I mean, you're right.
Sarge wasn't Sarge's legal first name. Like, we Dreams, for God's sake. Like, it is not unheard of in Survivor. In fact, I'd say it's like average of like once a season somebody's going by a name that isn't their real name in public.
On the audience's reception to Gabon, mostly negative. It was and is commonly called a parody of Survivor, and of course following Micronesia it had an uphill battle. It's very similar to Vanuatu, actually, in that it was initially received poorly and has kind of a renaissance with time. Like I said previously, there was a certain subsection of the fan base that goes crazy for Gabon. I've seen it ranked number one in some rankings.
That's insane.
Bananas. These are generally the sides of the fan base that enjoy drama, wacky characters, and character-based seasons as a whole.
There is something for everybody in Survivor, and I could see that being, yeah, those people. If you want to min-max your batshit insanery, if you want the Alice in Wonderland season, you know what? I said in our first episode of Token Sheens, I want a season full of Sandies. This was the season full of Sandies.
It was pretty darn close.
Yeah. Wow. Huh. We had that at home.
We had Sandy at home. On the other hand, some people absolutely fucking hated it. And when it aired and absolutely fucking hate it to this day, they will say the strategy was horrible, people made irrational decisions, and Bob stumbled ass backwards into an undeserving win. They should have done this, why didn't he do that, etc. These tend to be the types of people who go crazy for how we should split the vote conversations. Episodes with 253 confessionals of people talking about numbers and sitting in fields watching grass grow.
I wonder which side you're on.
It seems to be an opinion coming through there.
But here's the thing, I agree with both sides of that argument for the most part. The Bob stuff, obviously not quite so much, but like, it is wacky and insane, and people are making illogical decisions, and it's not a good, like, or at least a great strategic season of Survivor, and there's also a lot of interesting moves, like, it contains multitudes.
They also tend to see the winner as the crux of the season, as what the story needs to revolve around, and Survivor started editing its seasons like that at some point.
Oh, no, my favorite character in a season is typically not the winner. It's usually somebody that gets voted out in the final four or five and is like would have been the winner, but people go, oh shit, we got to get rid of them.
I always saw Survivor as a show about the cast and the relationships they built, not necessarily how the winner won, but those who watch for strategy lean towards the latter for obvious reasons. And they're not wrong for enjoying that more obviously. I make fun of it, but I understand the appeal even if I don't feel it. But that is a trend the show will go down with the editing department more and more, which I'm sure Edgic loved.
Yes.
My argument for why Gabon is a phenomenal season is that it has a singularly unique narrative that revolves around chaos.
I agree.
This season isn't about who's playing best game. Those who play standard games are taken out at the knees, either by twists or by underestimating the agents of chaos who control the narrative. Sugar. Instead, this season is about morality through the lens of people who are either a little or entirely insane. People who come to value winning pretty petty feuds over doing things that would help you win Survivor. If someone comes to you to think you're a bad person, you're on the chopping block.
And this is kind of why I think Bob's a better winner. Like, if everyone just fucking hates each other, just do what you can to make people like you. That is a valid strategy in this fucking craziness.
This would be intolerable if the contestants were normal, but thankfully none of them are.
No.
This all leads not only to hilarious clashes, but an emotional heart that beats very strongly. Villains get built up and have spectacular downfalls, all while the season's main character tries to shine through the darkness and bring about an ending she can be satisfied with, shunning logic or game theory in favor of her moral compass. There's nothing else like it.
There isn't, and at least not so far, and thank you. Yeah, there's... I think sometimes people that... Because I love strategy. If that doesn't come through, I fucking love strategy. I play, like, fully strategy games and stuff. But I also want the contestants to have agency, and I feel like people that are really into edgic or, like, only want the strategy part of it want the contestants to be pieces on a chessboard. And it's like, no, they're people, and some people behave irrationally sometimes. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't know what the fuck gas leak was happening in Gabon, but, like, that's just part of doing an experiment with 18 people that all have their own opinions and goals.
Do elephants release methane?
Yes.
Okay.
It's the methane leak season. Gabon is the methane leak season.
I enjoy the beginning of the season as well, so I would probably have it fourth behind Vanuatu, Amazon, and Pearl Islands. Yes, I would have it above Micronesia.
That's crazy.
I love Micronesia, but for some reason it just doesn't inspire the same emotions in me as some of the other seasons. Things like Jared initially putting Bob above winners like Brian, Viseppia, and Tina are the reasons I listen to this podcast. A truly baffling, jaw-dropping take that is almost as absurdist as the season it's about. I'm glad I talked you down a little bit on that one.
The inner workings of my mind are an anomaly.
Also, I'm an old hat, but I don't mind Borneo being beneath as low as you have it, other than the trip to the dentist that is Cook Islands. Only good seasons are above it.
Oh, okay. I see what you're saying. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. I'm gonna get as much flack for Bob as I continue to get for Ethan, huh?
Correct.
Which is funny because they're very similar winners. So the people that like my Ethan take hate my Bob take, and the people that like my Bob take hate my Ethan take. I managed to piss off everyone.
What are you gonna do? Oh, boy. You guys are great. You're so passionate about these things.
I just feel like the difference is Bob made a conscious decision to let everyone around him fight, and Ethan just was like, yeah, I'm here for a good time.
We vibing.
Oh, my God. That's so funny. Wow. Yeah, Gabon's divisive.
Yep.
I also wonder, knowing that Token Sheens is such a good season, and I can tell, even if our listeners hadn't written in and said that, like, I can tell from episode like one or two that this is, we've only seen two episodes, that like, oh, they're cooking up something. Like, it feels way more structured than Gabon did in those first couple episodes of like, ooh, they know the story right away, even if I don't know it yet.
Mm-hmm.
That's a bad place for Gabon to live. Like, right between two amazing seasons.
Sure.
Yeah.
All right. We have a couple more that are in the pipeline, but
oh my God.
I think we've talked for a while, so I want to actually get to the episode before we run out of time. So, bumper.
And now sit back and relax while I talk through fucking 20 minutes of stuff that happened between seasons. I'm kidding. Keep it way lower than that. But people that came here for this episode and do not like the finale emails or the before we talk about the episode content are going to be quite mad at us.
But you see why I didn't do it in the finale mailbag? Because, like, that added on a good extra half hour of just reading emails.
Correct. So the last season ended in the middle of December 2008. Token Sheens aired in February of 2009, February 12th. And then the episode that we're watching is February 19th of 2009. So a few things that happened in the months between seasons. This one is odd. It says Joe Lieberman endorses John McCain for president, but this is after the election, like a full month and a half after the election. So I don't know if that's a glitch on their website, and it's supposed to be 2008 that he did that. But either way, just a reminder, fuck Joe Lieberman. Israel invades Gaza. All that is old is new again. The Detroit Lions crashed to a 31-21 loss to the Green Bay Packers, being the first NFL team in history to go winless in a 16-game season.
Woo!
Yay.
You did it. You made history.
We sure did. Taiwan adopts Hanyu Pinyin, which is the... So basically not changing the language, but the way that it's written. More standardized. It's called the romanticization. Nailed it. Romanticization? Yeah. Romanticization. Changes the romanization of their language. So basically to match what China does and with the standard in the U.S. and other places that have that write Chinese out, so it's written the same.
Sure.
Bitcoin network is created as the first block of the digital currency is mined by a person or a group of people using the name Satoshi Nakamoto. And nothing bad happened with crypto from there. It certainly isn't a plague upon this world.
I direct you to the Brendan Lee Mulligan monologue about crypto.
Yeah. Yeah. The miracle at the Hudson happened. Miracle on the Hudson. The plane that the Sullenberger the Sully, lands on the Hudson. Yeah. Cool. That's cool. Steven, if a plane is going down, do you think you could land it? what percentage chance do you think that you would land that plane?
Okay,
safely?
So I know what this is about. This is the more men think that they could land a plane than absolutely should not be able to land a plane.
Correct.
So no is the answer.
What percentage?
But
chance
I want to give it a shot.
Well, yeah. Like, let's just say that you're the best hope for whatever reason.
Uh huh.
What percentage chance? And I'm talking like big commercial aircraft.
Like a 25% or less chance.
I think that's a little too high. I think of like 10-15%.
Okay.
Yeah, I just thinking about how big they are and how much mass has to stop, I think I'd nosedive it into the ground.
Sure. If it's
I think I'd get the wheels on the ground, but I think I'd either like flip the plane over or something like that.
I honestly no idea. I give myself like a little bit of a bonus in that I am at least video game trained.
That is true.
Like,
yeah.
I have good hand-eye coordination. Well, okay, no.
When I put it that way.
No, but we're keeping the percentage real low.
Yeah, fair enough. Barack Obama is inaugurated. Does this matter, Stephen? You're Catholic. Pope Benedict the 16th rescinds excommunications. Was this a big deal of four bishops consecrated without papal consent in 1988?
I don't remember it, so it was probably not a big deal.
Okay.
But, I mean, for the Pope to be like, nah, you're back in, it's that's a pretty big deal.
Posthumously, too, I think.
What?
Well, it says rescinds four bishops consecrated without papal consent in 1988.
I see. I thought you were saying the Pope did it after his death. And
that'd
I'm like,
be crazy.
How the hell did he do that?
We got Ghost Pope before GTA 6. Johanna Siguradottir. Sure. I don't know how to say the last name. I'm so sorry. Is elected as the first female prime minister of Iceland. First openly gay head of government in the modern world.
Nice.
The Steelers beat the Cardinals in the Super Bowl. RuPaul's Drag Race premiered.
Oh, cool.
Eric Holder becomes the first African-American attorney general, that's how they listed it. Bushfires in Victoria leave 173 dead in the worst natural disaster in Australian history. Really go back and forth on positive and negative in the news in this segment. Al Gore's book, An Inconvenient Truth, wins a Grammy Award for Best Spoken Word Album. I don't think that's typically the kind of stuff that's on the spoken word album list. That they gave a fucking audiobook, the spoken word album. Fuck off. That's pretty bananas. Rihanna cancels performances at the Grammys after Chris Brown commits domestic violence against her. And that is it. The number one song on the charts was Crack a Bottle by Eminem featuring Eminem and Dr. Dre and 50 Cent. There's no featuring. They just all wrote it together.
Nice.
The top five movies are Confessions of a Shopaholic. We're going to talk about number four. Friday the 13th. Who knows which fucking reboot of that. Taken, and He's Just Not That Into You. Why is Friday the 13th in February? Anyway. number four, Coraline. Also kind of curious why this is February now that I say that. But Steven, are you familiar with Coraline?
I am familiar with Coraline. I don't know that I've ever seen Coraline.
I don't think I have either. While exploring her new home, a girl named Coraline, Dakota Fanning, discovers a secret door behind which lies an alternate world that closely mirrors her own, but, in many ways, is better. She rejoices in her discovery, until other mother, Terry Hatcher, and the rest of her parallel family try to keep her there forever. Coraline must use all her resources and bravery to make it back to her own family and life. Steven, what do you think this rate on Rotten Tomatoes?
I think this is a cult classic. This is one that is constantly brought up as a great example of stop motion. And I'm going to go with a critic score of 87, an audience score of 91.
You're pretty close. I think you might actually flip them. Critic score of 91. Audience score of 74. Lower than I expected.
Yeah, me too.
I'm surprised critics like it more than audiences. But I know it's also kind of like horrifying, and it's billed as a kid's film, rated PG. So that's kind of nuts.
How many movies did we grow up with that are generally traumatic that are just passed off as kids' movies?
See, Courage the Cowardly Dog, at least TV show, but still. Critics' consensus, with its vivid stop-motion animation combined with Neil Gaiman's imaginative story, Coraline is a film that both visually stunning and wondrously entertaining.
Hmm. I'd like to point out that, who is the main voice actress?
Dakota Fanning.
She's fucking everywhere at this point in history.
Uh-huh.
I had just watched My Neighbor Totoro, and when Disney localized it, not the first time, the second time, they used Dakota Fanning, and I'm like, huh. And Elle Fanning, for that matter.
Hmm.
Both of them.
And I don't think she does that much now. Maybe she does, and I'm just not as tuned into pop culture, but...
I think she's made enough money that she can chill out.
Why not?
Elle Fanning still does stuff.
Ah, gotcha.
All right, then let's get into the episode. Episode 2, The Poison Apple Needs to Go.
I don't like getting a coach quote as the episode title.
Have you already had your fill of coach?
Yes. I'll get into him more in a little bit. But, two things in the recap. I didn't catch when I saw the episode the first time, but Jeff, for the vote, told them, vote for somebody to not make the trek.
Mm-hmm.
Which is so clever.
It's good wording.
Because it implies that they're going home.
Yep.
But it's actually telling you exactly what's happening to them, which is good on the show. Well played. And then says, Sandy narrowly escaped. My brother in Christ, it was a sweep. It was a sweep against Carolina. That was not that close.
And like, I guess the other option was her, but still.
Yeah, but that just means that anybody in an early episode that gets voted for by the person who goes home, it narrowly escaped.
Narrowly escapes.
I know what they're going for. I'm being pedantic, but it's like, okay. She wasn't in nearly as much danger as we thought she was through the entire episode.
Sure. Okay. That's it. Cool. We open at Jalapau and they feel like crap, but at least they have fire, so that's good. Things are looking up. Sandy talks about how Carolina has kept me in this game thus far. Thank God. I believe I'm underestimated. And thanks, everyone, for letting me hang in there for a little bit longer.
And she thinks she can win the game, she tells us in a confessional. I think we have chaotic evil Twyla. I think that's what Sandy is.
Okay. I see what you're going for with this.
Twyla, true neutral. Sandy, chaotic evil.
Someone says it, and I think it was Spencer, but he was in the dark, so it was hard to tell. Really, Sandy just swapped places with Carolina. She saved herself for another vote.
Yeah, and there was something that's unclear to me about this idol, though I think maybe I've worked it out now. The one that Sandy and Sierra have the clue for.
Yep. They do not have the idol.
They do not have the idol, famously so. Is it the first tribal after they find it, or the first tribal? Because Sandy says she still wants to go look for it, but then Sierra says it can only be used at the first tribal.
I think you're combining two thoughts in that she has to use it in the first tribal to keep herself safe, is what she was saying. It doesn't have to be used in the first tribal.
Got it.
What I remember, and it's been a while since I've seen this season, the clues that they're getting on Exile Island are pointing them to the clues that they're getting that they got on the first
day. I understand. So it's not a second idol that the people at Exile are looking for. It's the same one.
Correct.
Oh, they set that up really well. Like, they gave Sandy and Sierra a fucking head start.
Mm-hmm.
And that also means they set up the drama of, like, wait, I'm the only person who's been to Exile. How's the idol gone? Like, is something that could have happened, though.
Right.
I don't think it's going to necessarily, but if that was their intention, that's also really clever. Cool.
A little something, something.
They really thought this season out.
Yeah. And they wake up in the morning, they need protein real bad, so we go eat some termites.
It's like day four. We've jumped to bugs at day four.
Yeah, we kick the mound open. Steven Fishbach eats a big old worm looking thing, a grub.
He does not look happy to do it either.
No.
Yeah, that grub looked like something they would eat at a challenge.
Yeah.
Not just because it's day four and we're hungry.
Because I need it.
Which, I mean, I guess, yeah, that's what happens when you aren't on a tropical island.
At Timbira, they're also making fire, but they're struggling a bit more than the other tribe did. But I think they get it going. Do they?
Yeah, I think both tribes get fire.
Okay.
I mean, they fucking better at this point. They don't have another way to get water, so. But yes, yeah, because we see Timbira cook rice and beans.
You're right. Sierra feels like she's in trouble, so she leans on Brendan a little bit. And it's fascinating that she picks Brendan just with how this all goes.
It is, although I want to say, like, damn, Sierra's playing a good game.
Mm.
She's in one of the worst spots, or started this game in one of the worst spots you can possibly imagine. Literally being ostracized from the team and singled out from moment one. And every read she has been making so far is really good. Like, she doesn't just pick Brendan because, oh, I have a connection with him. She picks him because he's the one who didn't vote for me.
Correct.
So he's already more predisposed to liking me. She correctly assesses, hey, I need to build this camp out before people get here, and then I'll look for it later because I need to win over some favor. She's very open with her tribe. And it saves her.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't even think she was on the block necessarily.
She was.
I mean, she was, but like, I think by the time we get to the vote, the real question is it's looks like it's going to be Sierra or Candace. It's actually, I think, Sierra Candace or Coach, even though Coach doesn't get any votes because Candace says we can't get rid of him now. But if that conversation goes slightly differently, I think they make a push for him. She thinks Sierra is more. Or is an easier vote and the vote that everyone's going to take.
Sure.
But I think Coach was actually in more danger than Sierra was.
Yeah. I see the argument there. It makes sense in that they're all in play and Coach is more in play than people will maybe give credit for. But, boy, Sierra's name was real close to just being the one.
True. And to go from being the default vote off to only getting one vote from the person who goes home,
mm-hmm.
like, damn, she is doing the work.
Yeah. So Sierra shows him the clue, shows Brendan the clue. And so they go to work. They start going to the beach. They dig out from the 10 paces from the stick. And I don't know, why do you think they missed it, in your opinion?
Did they not find the clue? They found the first one, right?
They found the stick clue, and then yeah. The next one, the one that they're working on that sent them to dig the hole, was the 10 paces from that toward a tree.
Yeah, and I don't understand. They seem to go the opposite direction of the tree. So I don't really understand. Did they think it was, because the stick is in the sand, and then they're digging like closer to the water than the stick was, I thought.
No.
Okay.
No, because the clue very specifically says, turn your back to the water.
Right, I'm wondering how, I don't know, where they were digging didn't make any sense, and I have no idea how they got there is what I'm getting at.
I think they just didn't go far enough. I think
interesting.
Their 10 paces were real short paces.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, paces, famously an inaccurate way of measuring.
Yeah, I mean, that's how Survivor gets away with it. If they give them, well, it's exactly 5.7 meters away.
Sure, yeah.
Then you can at least eyeball it.
That'd be too easy.
Yeah. And Debbie catches them digging.
Yeah. And their lie here is really good, or Sierra's lie.
Sierra's lie.
Brendan doesn't know what to say.
Yeah. We're digging a fire pit for a big bonfire later.
Fun fact, on the next time on, at the end of this episode, they are at the fire pit.
Yeah.
They actually turn it into a fire pit.
I mean, why not?
Which is great for Sierra and Brendan short term. It is not amazing long term, because now you've just set a group hangout spot, like, 10 feet from the idol. Whoops.
Oops. Anyway, Debbie's real excited about that, brings it back to camp. Candace is like, that's dumb. Why do we need a fire pit? We have fire here.
I knew in that moment that Candace's time on this game would be short. I didn't realize it was going to be this short. But your first reaction to someone else in the tribe being excited about something that does not impact you negatively at all, going, you're an idiot, is not going to keep you in Survivor long.
We also talk with Candace about how she's starving and she wants some sea bass with some olive oil and some lime. And Tyson's really funny here. He's like, oh, those are all things that we can get around here. Really? No.
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 What do you mean? Okay.
I lied right to your face and you ate it up. It was great.
It's pretty funny. Also, should be a giant red flag for her. How easily Tyson lied to her. But I do understand the fish and the lime and thinking you can get that there. Girl, where do you think they're getting olive oil?
From the olive trees that are hanging out in Brazil.
Ah, yes, the Brazilian desert, famous for their olive production. But hey, him being able to be that convincing on such an obvious lie is really interesting. Even though it's just a joke, still interesting.
What does that tell you about Tyson going forward?
I think he's going to be able to get a lot of people to trust him.
Sure.
Now, the interesting thing will be when they trust him and he betrays them, will he be able to, because he's a very positive, fun-loving guy that people seem to like. He's like Matthew McConaughey. Coach, you know what? Him, Tyson and Coach are, if you just split Matthew McConaughey into two people. Like, Coach is all the scuzziness of Matthew McConaughey, or like at least the characters he plays. I don't fucking know anything about Matthew McConaughey. Like, he's the, like, high school girls the same age. Yeah, yeah, all right, yeah. All right. And then Tyson is the positive characters that Matthew McConaughey plays.
I was going to ask about, okay, where do you split Matthew McConaughey in half? And I was going to be like, who's diagonally. Top half? Who's bottom half? And then I'm like, well, I guess chest up would probably be bad Matthew McConaughey, and chest down is good Matthew McConaughey.
I think you flip those.
Really?
I think you flip those, yeah.
He's got good abs.
Oh, he does have good abs.
Yeah.
Waist up maybe is good. Waist down bad.
Sorry, Matthew. And then we...
Oh, you're on a first name basis with Matthew McConaughey?
Me and Matt, we hang out. No.
I have a friend in a two-person show called Matt and Ben that is about Matt Affleck. Nope. Matt Damon and Ben Correct. Affleck. Yep, there we go.
Yep.
And neither of those are Matthew McConaughey. Like, I thought they were when I started that sentence.
I was really confused where you were going with this, but okay, yeah, sure. Because I know that show.
I forgot that it's Matt Damon, not Matthew McConaughey, until I started to say it out loud.
Because that show is about how Matt Damon and Ben Affleck just stumble ass backwards into writing a show.
Oh my God. Okay, I'm unwell. Let's keep going.
Okay, speaking of Candace, we're talking about cooking rice and beans together. Coach says, well, I don't think this is a great idea because rice soaks up the water and you need water for the beans, so it may not cook evenly. And Candace is like, well, I'm going to do it anyway. Like, it's okay for you to disagree, but I want to do it this way. And Coach points out that Candace has a personality like mine. She looks to find faults, and I do it because I'm a coach. Oh, wait, I think I flipped that. Coach is the one who wants to do it a certain way, and Candace is trying to point out.
Yeah, I thought Coach was the one who wanted to split them. I thought you were right the first time.
Yeah, yeah.
But
either way, it's a conflict. And Coach is like, she finds faults. I do it because I'm a coach. I think she does it because that's her nature. I think she does it. We guess it's her nature, but she's also an attorney, so of course.
Yeah, I also want to point out his quote from the bio. That he thinks coaching is manipulation. So he thinks his job is to find fault in people and then manipulate them.
For the record, I did look it up. He was coaching women.
Yeah, that, I kind of just figured.
Yeah.
Like, I kind of just knew.
He seems the type.
Yeah. you combine those two ethoses and that seems... Like, I know what he's getting at, but I don't like the vibe when you put it all together.
Correct.
The Candace and Coach is giving Dave and Sharia from China, except it goes on for much less time, and Coach wins this instead of Sharia winning it.
Yeah. And then they get into this whole, like, I don't want to fight you, I just want to
kiss you, says Coach.
Yeah. Oh, it's, yeah. Yeah.
It's real uncomfy vibes.
Yeah. This whole section, combine everything I just said and add this, and it's, dude, it's all, And so I guess really Coach is more Dave and John Robert combined into one.
Oh, and it's fascinating too that people kind of jump on Coach's side when I don't know why Candace would have any predisposition to want Coach to get out of this game.
What do you mean?
The whole fucking scene that we're talking about right now.
Oh, you're talking about, okay, you're jumping ahead. I thought you meant before that happens.
Oh,
yeah,
sorry.
No,
yeah.
It doesn't. Yeah. And the, she's like, okay, you can like kiss me on the neck. Like, it's so uncomfortable.
The man has an ego bigger than Brazil, she says.
I don't disagree.
There's way uncomfy vibes. Anyway, at Jalapau, Taj talks about how, oh, I think I clean up pretty good, I swear. My husband thinks I'm cute. Well, what does your husband do? He's a football analyst. He gets all the information, you see. Well, what's his name? Eddie? Eddie who? George? Oops.
That was a mistake.
You're married to Eddie George, the Ohio State Buckeye, the Heisman Trophy winner, Eddie George.
Steven, are you familiar with Eddie George?
I did know the name.
I looked him up because I was like, I don't know football. Like, I didn't know him. Like, mm-hmm. That era of football, I only, like, know little bits.
He had a much better college career than he did an NFL career. But
he was still a first-round draft pick.
Oh, yeah.
And he went to, like, multiple Pro Bowls.
Like, I didn't know that.
I think so. Regardless, like, he was... let me look up. He won a couple playoff games and had like 400 yards across two playoff games. Like, this is not a guy that is like a backup.
He's not a nothing name.
A seventh round draft pick kind of guy. Like, that name's going to get caught immediately. That's like being like, oh yeah, my husband's Adrian Peterson. And just being like, what? Well, what are you doing here?
That would be a bigger conversation.
Fair enough.
Yeah, Spencer and JT freak out about this, and Steven's sitting there like, I have no idea who this person is, and I feel like an idiot for at this point, and I'm too afraid to ask. So JT kind of continues down the line of, wait, if she's married to Eddie George, she probably has way more money than I do, and I don't really know that she needs $1 million.
Yeah, he was a 1,000-yard rusher for 5 straight seasons.
Damn.
Like, Jesus Christ. And never missed a game. Like, from 1996 to 2003, played 16 games every single season.
Oh, damn. I didn't realize he played that long. I thought it was a shorter career.
2004, it looks like he went to Dallas, and then he had a short season and never played again. But he was, like, a Houston Oiler / he went with them to the Tennessee Titans and, like, basically founded that franchise. That's nuts. Taj, you are screwed. You are so screwed.
Good luck. Anyway, immunity challenge. Jeff brings them all in, starts talking, and immediately we get the rain. They couldn't have planned this any better for them to walk in. Rain starts. We finish up. Rain goes away.
Yeah. And lightning. I'm surprised they played in the river in lightning.
So they're playing essentially no holds bar basketball. I'm going to throw in a ball. You have to shoot it in a basket, but both baskets are, instead of being on opposite ends of the court, they're right next to each other so that you don't have to run it back the other direction if you miss or if you catch the opponent's miss.
I compared the...
to a summer's day?
Yes. I don't remember the rest of the words. Damn, I failed my Shakespeare background. I compare this to Australia. It's also very Guatemala in environment, except that they can use the fucking river.
Yes.
They can use the river for challenges.
It's big.
That's big. There's only so many challenges you can do in a fucking desert that are going to work.
Mm-hmm.
Like Gabon, they got away with it because they had these big, vast expanses. They could build huge set pieces and was actually quite cool. You can't do that in Dokkan-Sheen, so I'm really fucking glad they have this river for the challenge going forward because this challenge is awesome.
It's pretty cool.
Except that Sierra almost dies.
Almost dies.
She almost gets Yao-manned.
I am surprised that no one said anything about, like, hey, she's been underwater for a long time.
Yeah. Jeff, when did you get involved? When does production get involved to, like, hey, you gotta let her go? Because they'll do stuff like that if it's, like, choking or eyes or things like that and other physical challenges.
I mean,
but they don't seem to care when people are drowning, like, from the story Eric told us. And now this, like,
I think I remember Jeff saying something once it was flagged for his attention that, like, Yalman's been under for a while, and this, I feel like if it would have gone on a few seconds longer, he may have said something.
Hopefully.
I hope so. Ugh. Who knows? Anyway, they're playing best to first to three baskets, and they are also going to win fishing gear and send someone to Exile Island. But wait, there's a twist.
And also, it's immunity.
Yes.
Which I didn't even catch them say at the beginning. And then they handed the immunity idol. I went, oh, okay.
Because it's so early in the episode, I wrote down, oh, this is the reward challenge. And then I crossed it out and went back and said, oh, no, this is immunity. Because he takes the idol right away. And I went, oh, okay, never mind.
Yeah.
Not uncommon for them to do that, but just how early it is made me go, oh, that's something.
That, and it makes exile tricky. Because being sent away, and then, like, usually people are sent away, they're sent away at reward, they come back for immunity, mm-hmm. they're there for the whole scramble. Now this person is only there for a very small part of the scramble. It doesn't affect anything, but it throws a wrench in the game that I don't know that I necessarily care for.
We've seen it before, but it's still, you're right. It makes it weird because you're gone for a day and then come back and then you have half a day to figure it out, which is the same, but you just don't have the ideas that everyone else is going with that, oh, we have to vote someone out. They're already talking about it versus
yes.
We all come back together.
You're coming in mid-conversation rather than the start of the conversation. And yeah, they've done it other seasons. I don't care for it whenever it happens.
Yeah. I'm going to skip over the specifics of the challenge, but if you have anything that you want to say of overall.
It seems cool that they were randomly selecting who was facing who. At least that's what Jeff said.
Okay.
Except, like, it did end up being a lot of the same people that were playing.
We saw Tyson quite a bit.
Yeah. So I guess that was just luck? I don't know. Specifics of it, I wrote down that Taj, great muscle, no aim. Could not throw that in the basket to save her life.
Nah.
But she's strong. I didn't realize how much I want a close tribal battle until this episode where they won. Because when was the last time that we really had, like, two tribes that are, like, actively, that are close? Not necessarily in numbers. We've had plenty of that. But are actually, like, close in competition for the challenges.
It's been a while.
Is it Guatemala? Because, like, Cook Islands, that one's a little hard to analyze because they split into... They did so many tribe swaps and all that. I guess it was kind of close, but really, like, I2 ran away with it once they were after the mutiny, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Fiji was very one-sided.
China was pretty one-sided as well. Micronesia.
Incredibly one-sided.
One-sided. Gabon.
Very one-sided. They switched tribes three times and still one tribe kept losing.
You might be right. Maybe Guatemala is our best example.
And, like... all those seasons had good strategy. It didn't end up stalling the game. But I want the I want to be excited for the challenge and not just go, all right, let's see how Fong loses this time.
Yeah. And the it's close for a while. Or I shouldn't say that. It went 2-0 for... why am I forgetting my tribe name? Timbira.
Yes.
And then... Jalapeno wins three in a row.
Jalapeno. I can't remember their actual name. I just keep hearing Sandy say jalapeno.
I know, it's pretty great. Who knew that Steven Fishbach was going to be the game-winning basket?
I wrote down, hell yeah, Fishbach. I also thought it was funny in one of the rounds, Sandy just grabs the girl next to her, I don't remember who it was, and just holds her at the flag for the entire round.
It was Aaron. She's holding her by her top.
Why? You're not doing anything for your team. I think her team talked to her, because the next time she's out there, she didn't do that.
Yeah, it didn't actually help you in any sort of way.
Sandy is so insane.
Unless you're thinking, we have a physical advantage in this one, and taking one person out would be helpful, but I don't think it is.
But even that, like, Aaron doesn't seem like the strongest person that was on that court, so go take out the other person.
Yeah. So, Jalapau wins, and upon receiving their win... everyone looks so cold and so miserable. They choose to send Brennan to Exile Island. And Jeff says, well, not to mention, I have this very wet but very effective note still. One member of the winning tribe will join you at Exile, so you get to pick. So he picks Taj.
We did this last season too, except the winning tribe picked who they were sending. So that's an interesting variation on it.
Yeah. I mean, we've seen two people at Exile.
Sorry, not last season. Micronesia.
Yeah. Yeah. We've seen two people at Tribal or at Exile before.
I think it's interesting. The go back to the other tribe part is also interesting. Because it didn't say swap both of you. Like, it didn't say that Taj would go to Timbira. So you're just, I guess if you feel like you're on the bottom of your tribe, get on over there. And once your tribe figures that out, if you want to pull somebody over, you can be like, send them to Exile, and then they'll come join us.
Mm-hmm. But it's also a 50-50 draw that the right person gets the bottle.
Oh, that's true. You can't, I guess you can't just give the other person the note, correct? Can you? Damn. Okay.
All right. So,
but I think like this is very similar to Mutiny from Cook Islands, because I like this a lot better because it's an individual choice and it's hidden whether you actually got it.
Right.
It's not a public one and then puts a weird mark on you or like you have to do that pressure of like, oh God, do I step forward? Do I not? You have some time to think about it and see if it fits your game.
Yeah. So at Jalapau, they celebrate their fishing year a little bit. JT and Steven have a little bromance going on.
Is Fishbot queer?
I don't know.
Okay. There was some language in there that I was like, is this guys being dudes or is this Fishbot having a crush on JT? And I was like, that comes down to Fishbot's sexuality. And either way, this is a really fun scene.
Yeah, I think it's just fun. He may be just seducing me with his pretty country ways.
That was the one that
made
me...
But I'm smitten.
Yeah, yeah. That was the one that made me go, is that just a fun way of saying that? Or is there something we don't know about Fishbok that is neither here nor there, but would change the context?
Nah, I just think it's fun. And Steven says, I'm going to be the greatest spear fisherman of all time. And JT's like, well, you have nothing but time, so sure, go for it.
Yeah, that's one way to pass the time in Brazil.
At Exile Island... island with quotation marks.
Sure.
Doing a heavy lifting.
At least there's a fucking river around it.
It's really cool, though, because it's this big sand dune, and they walk up, they choose one of two gourds, urns. They are in the shape of gourd. Anyway.
Yeah.
One person gets nothing, the other person gets a clue to the hidden immunity idol, and another note that says you can swap tribes if you want.
Neat.
Yeah.
Well, not swap, go to the other tribe.
You can go to the other tribe. You can go home to other tribe. Do you think anyone's going to do it?
It would have to be a really unique set of circumstances. I think it's possible.
Okay.
Like, yeah. Especially when the numbers get a little bit lower. Mm-hmm. Because it is like, my gut instinct right when they revealed it was, why would anyone do that? Like, you are putting yourself on the chopping block immediately. Then I was like, well, there's two other ways. If you think you're going home on your own tribe, great. Especially if you think the other tribe's going to keep winning challenges. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, go over there and maybe they don't go to tribal, so you don't have to worry about it. Or if you have the hidden immunity idol. Or to look for the hidden immunity idol.
Sure.
If you know where it is at your beach, you should know where it is at their beach. Mm-hmm. And then if you think you're in danger, you can just use it. Just become an like inside assassin to take out whoever you want on the other tribe.
It is a move.
That would be really cool.
It would be pretty cool. We'll see if it happens. The thing that kind of works against it is that Brennan gets the right urn. And so he immediately says, I'm not sharing my clue with Taj. And then he went, oh, wait, I can't decipher this for shit.
Yeah, he is not good at clues. Like, it seems so obvious to me that the land that you came from, whatever, it is your home base. It's your tribe. It's your campground, whatever you want to call it. It's not a beach. So it's not. You're not at your beach.
He would have just wandered all around Exile Island for the entire day.
Yeah. Exile does feel more isolated than Gabon, though.
Yes.
I think not seeing them literally start walking in that direction helps, for sure. The river around it helps, and the giant sand dune, not it just being a little shack in the middle of a small pond.
Yeah. So Taj convinces him, I'll help you. It's your idol, whatever. Just you can have it. And she sees it, and she's like, that's back at camp. It's not going to be here.
This exile also feels very modern, just in like the, ooh, pick one of two urns, and there's two of you here, and there's a twist, and all of that, that I think they will replicate going forward.
Mm, okay. So we then get a flip. We go over to Timbira. They're still reeling from the challenge. Jerry has a chunk out of his elbow. Aaron was shocked at the little old lady, she says. And Sierra almost drowned.
Yeah. Yeah, Sandy got that chimpanzee strength.
And Candace says, you know, Coach really didn't do much in that challenge. He's kind of like the church ladies that wear the fancy hats and talk shit.
She's right.
She's right.
He didn't do anything. It should have been Coach.
Mm-hmm. So then Debbie comes in and she's like, I didn't like how she talked about Coach, and goes immediately to Coach and Tyson to kind of rat her out. And
fucking narc.
Why do you think this is a loyalty to Coach that Debbie is showing, or is this a dislike of Candace?
I think both can be true.
Okay.
I also think that, I know I just called her a narc, but it is a good move, because that is a really good way to build trust, is, hey, I saved you from this person that is trying to backstab you, especially this early in the game, if it's somebody that you don't necessarily care if they're mm-hmm. here or not. Here's the sacrificial lamb so that you'll trust me. Here's an action showing that you can trust me. And then you can abuse that trust later if you want to.
Sure.
But you have, it makes you very safe to be the narc.
That's fair.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's really hard to tell what the tribe as a whole thinks of Candace, because we don't really get anyone's opinion other than Coach and this little snippet, but everyone votes for her. So yeah. Is Coach running the tribe, or is it... her attitude early on to the bonfire pit was weird. And I'm like, how many more of those moments did we not see?
Mm-hmm.
Where she was just like shutting people down. Like, I guess we see the rice and beans thing with Coach. Like, if you do that 15 times over the course of 6 days, it's not going to be a hard lift for the tribe to go, yeah, okay, let's just get rid of her. She's bringing us down.
Debbie says, I don't like the negativity. Coach talks about her being a poison to the team. I think...
cult leader language.
Yeah. Yeah. I have opinions that I'll bring later into this, but
okay.
Coach is just like, she's a poison. She has a negative attitude. I think everyone's fed up with it. She is a cancer that will ruin the tribe.
Sure. I mean, I have talked about tribe cancers before. I don't think Candace is necessarily one.
I really don't think so either.
But it's not like it's something that when people are should be ignored.
Yeah. Brennan returns. He talks about the dune and his experience, and he tells them everything-ish.
It lies about one detail that's really a good lie.
There are two urns, and I picked the wrong urn, so I didn't get a clue.
It's a really smart lie.
It's probable deniability.
Yeah. I mean, it has every element of truth
yep.
that is verifiable. The rest of it would only be verifiable through Taj, and then, like, nobody's going to care by then.
Mm-hmm. So when someone gets sent there other than him and says, no, he was right about the urns thing.
Yep.
Yeah. So that happens. Says Taj got the note. Candace and Aaron talk together that they want Coach, but it might be too soon to do this. Like,
yeah.
They're really rationalizing this. It makes mm-hmm. sense what they're saying. But my whole thing is, where did Aaron flip on this?
Yeah, I mean, maybe she just smelled that the vote was going to go her way.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was like, oh, well, I'm not going to stick my neck out for Candace. Mm-hmm. Like, if Candace is going home, then okay, got it.
Yeah. And this scene, the big group talk at the camp where Coach says, all right, we have to stick to the plan. And Aaron says, the plan is Sierra, right? Because Sierra is not there.
Yeah.
And Coach says, the original plan was Sierra. Yes, you are correct.
That's a weird way to phrase it, but it's just enough to not make her freak out, I think.
And Aaron says, great, not sure if there was a new plan, because you know who was there. Candace.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting. I also, like, what is the alliance structure on this tribe? Or is there not one yet? Are there individual relationships, but there hasn't been a majority alliance that has formed? Or maybe, like, kind of by default of, like, well, Sierra's on the outs because we think that she's not going to be beneficial to the tribe. Like, if it's more... We see these sort of soft alliances sometimes that I think I've criticized, maybe been too harsh on, where it's just like, hey, I don't need to have the majority in the alliance or in the tribe. We just need the majority of the tribe to stay strong, and I am strong, so we're together by necessity, but we're not making, like, a fucking Final Four pact. We're just going to analyze who is the weakest member and get rid of them for at least the first two or three votes. Is probably fine. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's the greatest strategy, but I can see how people get there a little more now.
Yeah. I think it's more soft alliances right now.
Yeah.
And we'll see what happens to kind of solidify those.
JT and Fishbach, I guess. But
really, it's the just don't be the first one.
Yeah.
Don't be first.
Anybody but me. Anybody? A tribe full of Sandras. There is another quote from Coach that combined everything else we said and the weird kissing scene. Just, I hate him so much.
Uh-huh.
I made my living off people trusting me. So to recap about his view on coaching, and remember, an all women's team, let's not forget that, is it's his job to point out faults,
uh-huh.
to manipulate people,
uh-huh.
and he makes his living off people trusting him.
That quote is fascinating too, knowing what I know about the future. So, like, him personally.
Okay.
Fascinating.
Okay. Wow. I have not, like, been this icked out by a contestant since John Robert.
It's fair.
Yeah.
It's a different style of ick.
Yeah, it's less crass and more like I just ran into him outside the fucking Scientology building.
And I mean this in the most movie way, not the language way. You know I was going to say Predator. You know Alien, where Alien is like right up next to Sigourney Weaver's head?
Yeah.
That's what I'm picturing with Coach.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I'm picturing him all in white and telling his followers that the meteor's coming, so it's
time to drink the Kool-Aid.
Time to drink the Kool-Aid. Yeah.
Anyway, Coach rallies Tyson. Tyson's not quite sure that this is the right move. It's like there are challenges that Candace is going to be better than Sierra.
Tyson really doesn't like Sierra.
Yeah.
I mean, he hasn't said anything that's like individually like he does not like, but he has not stopped making her his target from moment one.
Mm-hmm. And then Coach goes and rallies Sierra as well, saying that Candace and Aaron talk that we're good. Oh, no, that's just it. He rallies Sierra. And the last scene before Tribal, Candace and Aaron sit down. Hey, they know our worth. If it's not Sierra, there's some mad shadiness going around the tribe, saying that directly to Aaron's face.
Well, it is pretty warm in Token Sheen, so there does need to be some shade.
We're about to find some shade. Anything else before Tribal?
No, that's it.
Okay. Flip to Tribal. Sierra's... We kind of bashed Sierra for a bit, that she gave up right away, and there was some resentment behind the rest of the people that she didn't make the trip. I think that it's... I don't know. I was sick. I struggled. And it was clear to everyone that I was struggling, so I don't blame them, but... It sucks.
A lesser contestant gets really defensive here.
Mm-hmm.
Like, a lesser contestant would go, what do you mean I didn't make the trip? You guys voted me out.
Sure.
And would cause a fight that might make her go home. So, like, I don't think the whole tribe would change their votes, and it's not a close enough vote, obviously, for, like, one person to matter. But at least put her on worse footing with her tribe. And, like, there is, I think, some weakness here in her answer of just kind of accepting their argument that she is the weakest member of the tribe. Like, I think she should have pushed back a little bit and been like, yeah, I mean, sure, I was overpowered a little bit in this challenge. I also did really well in the first challenge, and there will be other types of challenges. Like, we're not going to be fighting for a basketball in the water every single challenge from here on out. Like, we don't know what's coming. But besides that, like, I think she played this really incredibly.
Mm-hmm.
From again, one of the weakest positions I can remember a contestant being in.
Sure. Candace and Coach both kind of give some thinly veiled, I don't like these, each other comments.
Yeah.
Of Candace saying, I think I'm meshing, but I talk a lot, and some people don't necessarily like that. Coach says, if you clash, you need to sense it on your own. Yada, yada, yada. Coach says that Brendan told us about the urns. He didn't get the clue, and I trust him 100%. And then it cuts to him going, like, those shifty eyes, like, hmm?
Yeah. Which might not have been a reaction to that, as we've talked about before. He might have kept a better poker face than that.
Still funny, though.
It's good editing.
Aaron talks about how we have to be careful about who we trust. And Debbie says, well, this isn't the Holiday Inn. The trek that we went on all together, that's how we got to know someone and how we continue to know who they are.
Trauma bonding.
Yeah. And Aaron says, I don't know that's how you get to trust someone. Like, you get to know someone through that, not trust someone.
Hey, Aaron, why are you sticking your neck out? Why say any of this? Aaron is right, by the way. but you don't need to tell everyone that you're not trusting them and that they're an idiot for trusting you.
Mm-hmm.
What? Mm-hmm. What? You? This is an unforced error.
Yeah.
What are we doing here?
So, then we vote.
Oh, there's one other thing I want to say.
Go ahead.
Jeff looks really good this season.
Oh.
He let his hair grow out a little bit, and he looks good.
He is finding the hairstyle that kind of stands the test of Survivor time.
Oh, and one last thing.
Mm-hmm.
Compare, like, just go back if you want to, or just think about it. Like, this tribal versus any early tribal, or really any tribal at Gabon, this cast is so much more engaged. Like, physically, it feels like. Like, this in Micronesia. Like, it feels like the whole cast are, like, locked in. They are ready to talk to Jeff. They are, like, they have interesting answers. They're listening when each other are talking. And that is a subtle, but, like, says a lot about the difference between Gabon and this.
Sure. Okay.
That's it.
That's it. And we vote, and Candace is voted out on a 7-1.
Sweep!
She gone. How do you think Candace does in Future Survivor?
It is quite damning to be voted out in a sweep this early,
mm-hmm.
with how she is stronger at the challenges than Sierra. And probably Aaron, though, who's to say? So I think that she's probably, like, I don't think there's a lot of lost potential there. It's very small stuff. And I'm interested to see, like, if you have background knowledge of, like, maybe she was, I mean, like, of course, there's always the racial element, like, you know, was she perceived more negatively, like, by tribe mates with their implicit bias and all of that. But being hard to get along with is really hard in Survivor. It's the thing that got Carolina voted off as well. And the thing that should get Sandy voted off here in the near future, to be honest. But we didn't get to see a ton of her. I do wonder if she could have rallied people to vote out Coach, if she would have tried harder on that. But regardless of any of that, I think she's probably always an early boot in the first three of her tribe.
Okay.
Though I think her tribe, on average, would win more challenges than an average tribe. If she's brought in to be the weak, like, one of the physical, like, weaker links, quote unquote, she is on the stronger end of that typecasting.
Mm-hmm. Got it. Well, she's not coming back. She does give an interview, which is kind of fascinating, that I cannot read to you because it gives away some stuff later down the line. But she talks about how the vote kind of really took her by surprise, but on her way to tribal, she sensed some shifty eyes that were like, I don't think people won't look me in the eye that I think should be looking me in the eye. So I kind of had an idea it was coming.
Okay.
Talks about how really the idea that one coach saying that I want to have this, like, strong tribe and I want to vote out the weakest is bullshit, because she's clearly stronger than multiple women on that tribe.
She is.
Yeah. And yeah, I don't know. I think, for me, I think this is just a product of what happened and the personalities that were there.
Mm-hmm.
Because by all means, I think she's a strong contestant.
I think that she's more fit for something like The Challenge, to be honest.
Really?
I just think, like, one where they're not voting people out is a better game for her. One where she gets to be on her own, like, in an army of one rather than a team. Although her social game wasn't that bad. I think maybe I am overselling that. Yeah, it's just tough because we're trying to read a lot between the lines. The sweep is just so damning.
Yeah. I would want to hear why Aaron flipped it.
Yeah.
If she just, like, saw the writing on the wall and said, I don't want to be the odd one out because then I'm next.
It is crazy that she was a first boot. I don't think that's typical, actually. I guess I'll change it and say, like, she's usually, like, a second or third vote.
Okay.
But she clearly, like, just didn't make the relationship she needed to make.
Yeah.
And that scene with Coach was so gross.
It's real gross.
And I'm surprised that the other people on the tribe would want to go behind Coach that hard. And I know he's a bit of a cult of personality, like, or at least I get that impression from him. But I wonder, like, what about her made them all go, no, but she's the one we have to get rid of. Like, there's just, I feel like there's something in the story missing.
Mm-hmm. In my opinion, I feel like Debbie was so quick to throw her under the bus that it's hard to look away from the older white woman saying, like, yeah. Oh, fuck that lady in particular.
But there's also that moment where she comes back. Debbie's the one who's super excited about the fire pit.
Yeah.
And then Candace is like, no, that's stupid. Leave me alone. So, like, yes, it is hard to look away from that. I'm also interested. That's the missing piece. How many times was she just shutting people down and being negative?
Yeah. But in 3 days, that's...
Six.
6 days. You're right. That's hard. I wish they would have shown more of that.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Candace, interesting person. Like, she gets some... She's in a lot of things post-Survivor, like TV and film-wise.
Oh, geez. Okay.
She has appeared in 3 feature films since her time on Survivor, The Slam and Salmon, End of Watch, and Gimme Shelter.
Give me a second.
Okay. In 2014, Candace became a cast member on Bravo's The Millionaire Matchmaker for the 8th season. And Candace appeared in an episode of Hawaii Five-0 that aired in 2015. She is also the second Miss Ohio USA winner to compete in Survivor.
That's weird.
Isn't
Who was
that
the
weird?
First?
Kim Mullen of Palau.
Huh. Okay. God, people from Ohio just really want to get out of Ohio. Go to space, go to token sheens, whatever it might take.
Oh, fascinating. She was also, previous to Survivor, she was a model on The Price is Right.
Oh.
Girls lived many lives.
Good for her.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. Your protagonist of the episode...
There's actually quite a few options here. I think if we make it about the vote, it's unfortunately Coach.
Mm.
Yeah.
It's a bit of an ensemble episode.
It is, yeah, because you have a bunch of different storylines starting. I mean, Sierra has her own arc.
Mm-hmm.
You obviously have the Brendan arc of looking for two different idols this episode that actually turned out to be the same idol.
Correct.
Weirdly enough. You have the seeds being planted and the arc developing of Taj... having her home life revealed a la Gary from Guatemala and going, oh no, oh shit. Except she didn't lie about it.
Right.
She just, it reminds me of, everything reminds me of a scene in Community, but there's, I don't remember what the word is, but Donald Glover like hangs on the word of like let's say it's in the stove. He goes, in the stove. I couldn't think of another word. Like, that's kind of how that whole scene felt with Taj being sure. Like, I couldn't think of the thing that wouldn't get them there. So I'll make it, because there are so many interesting storylines, and I'll just pick, those were all, I guess, B-plots to the vote, which mm-hmm. is Coach and Candace. Coach wins. We don't see enough of Candace of, like, for her to have dug her own grave, so I think it's Coach's episode, unfortunately.
All right. Cool.
He is the quote for the episode, too, so he that kind of makes sense. Episode. Yeah.
Well.
Should have been Coach.
Should have been Coach.
Pulling out an oldie but a goodie.
Yeah. That's it then. Shall we shut this down?
With a...
bumper.
What if we did an entire episode through, like, two-headed giant style?
It'd be awful.
We
no one would
one
like
word
that.
Each back and
no
forth.
No one would like that episode. That'll do it for this episode of the Survivor Turning Back Time podcast. Jared, anything you'd like to promote?
Expedition 33. It's so fucking good, man. I might be through act two. I don't know. I finished a big story moment and then it like sent me back to camp. And maybe when I'm done with that camping section, I think it might go to act three, but I'm not entirely sure yet. Either way, it's impeccable.
Jared's
so
a happy
good.
Boy.
I'm so happy with it. I also made it so hard that it makes me angry, but mostly on like side optional stuff. I breeze through most of the story stuff now on the hardest difficulty. I have it on the hardest difficulty, and I have everyone set to be glass cannons. So if I fuck up a single dodge, it usually wipes the entire party.
Okay.
Yeah. And there was a mini boss I fought, or a side boss, where I had to beat it by dodging 140 times correctly. That was hard.
That's so funny.
That, I was counting it out loud every time.
I said it to you. That's like a rhythm heaven game at
rhythm
that
hell.
Point. There you go.
Yeah. What about you, Steven?
I'm going to jump on your bandwagon and say a video game. If you haven't played Tunic and you have a PS5,
oh.
You should play Tunic. It's great.
It's Fable-esque, right?
It's... I want to say it's pretty... I've never played Fable, so I don't know. It's a game where you walk in and you know nothing. It's very Legend of Zelda-inspired, but if there was zero people telling you what to do in Legend of Zelda. And I think the whole plot of it kind of revolves around this instruction booklet that you put the pieces together as you play. Mm-hmm. But I just got to a part where I went, huh, not everything is as it seems, I think. Yeah. And you, like, learn all these things as you're playing. So there was one, like, very important element of the game that I was just playing without for a long time until I got a page that told me what to do. And I went, I could have just been doing that this whole time.
Sure.
Damn it. Yeah. It's a fascinating game. Don't look anything up. Just give it a shot.
Oh, same thing with Expedition 33. Do not look anything up.
Okay.
I do want to point out that their soundtrack, if you don't play video games, just listen to the soundtrack, because it's legitimately, the whole game is just art, but the soundtrack, like, is going to win awards. It's phenomenal. It's a dude they found off SoundCloud.
Hell yeah.
He was just like a teacher.
He's just a rapper?
No.
SoundCloud rapper?
Very much not a rapper.
White SoundCloud rapper?
No.
Come on.
I mean, he's French, so who knows? But it's so crazy. That game's so good, it makes me wish the French were real. My two favorite games make me wish the French were real.
What the fuck?
But there's the French aren't, they're mythical people, Steven. They don't exist.
I'm gonna pass. My last name is French.
That's crazy that they'd give you a fictional last name.
For my co-host Jared, this is Steven.
For my host Steven, this is Jared.
Oh my god. Goodbye.
Goodbye.